Namah to Ratana Tayasa. Welcome everyone. Today we're broadcasting here live from Wat Thai of Los Angeles. I'm broadcasting over the internet via my web blog. And today I will be starting again to give talks at 1 p.m. So this is our first 1 p.m. talk this week. Today's talk, I thought I would talk about Dharma or Dhamma, the teaching of the Buddha in the working world, or how it relates to, as it relates to work. And so this is a topic which we can deal with on various levels. And mainly we have the talking about work in terms of working in the world, and then we have work in terms of working in the Dhamma, working in the Buddhist religion. For instance, say working as a monk or working as a nun. And I do see quite often that people try to separate these two out, and I think this is one way of approaching the topic of work, how the Buddha Dhamma relates to work, is to separate out one's working life and one's Dharma practice. And another way of going about it is to try and bring one's life so that there is no difference between work and Dharma, or work and Dhamma, work and practice. And so I'd like to sort of try to deal with these different ways of looking at how to live our lives in the world, or how to make our Dhamma practice fit with our work life. And I think this is a question for people who aren't Buddhist as well. It's a question for all people, how to make their public and their private life, or their work and their home life, mesh together, or how to juggle the two. So I think it's an interesting topic to discuss. First, when we talk about anything in Buddhism, we have to look at it in terms of the Eightfold Noble Path, or the three trainings which form the core of Buddhism. So how we often answer the question of how to fit one's livelihood into Dhamma practice of the Buddha's teaching, we often answer it by referring to morality, which is the first part of the path of the Buddha. So we will talk about the various ways that livelihood is incorrect or incompatible with Buddhism. And often we never go beyond this, but so while it's important to start with this as our basis, as in all things, start with morality as the base, it's important that we then look beyond this. And so I'd like to say that I'm going to start here and explain this, but this certainly isn't where we want to stop. I think it's a shame that often this is the only aspect of livelihood that ever gets discussed, is that these things that you shouldn't do, like as though if you didn't do this and this and this, then you would be somehow, poof, you would be a good Buddhist, or you would be guaranteed to progress on the path. The basis of right livelihood is morality. Because livelihood, of course, is an external thing. It's generally a physical and a verbal undertaking, where we undertake certain acts or certain speech for the purpose of feeding ourselves, or the purpose of providing our necessities. And so, as the very basis of, in all things, as the very basis of our entrance into Buddhism, there are certain things which we're going to have to cut off. This is for in the case, for instance, of people who had never practiced Buddhism before. Where do you start? You want to start taking up meditation. Well, what are the first things that you have to adjust in order that your meditation will progress? And of course, morality is the first thing that we have to adjust. There are certain things, actions, and certain speech that we have to give up. And in livelihood, this is doubly so, because livelihood is sort of the one thing that we have to carry out and continue in our lives. We may not have the opportunity to kill or to steal for other reasons, but these can become very obvious or frequent in the case of livelihood. So for people who are hunters or are butchers or are thieves, for instance, people who are prostitutes, even salespeople who lie or use deception to gain their livelihood. All of these things are really worth noting, whereas we normally just talk about morality in terms of the things in general that we shouldn't do. It's worth noting that our livelihood is a place where we're going to really have to examine and see where and look at it as an obvious place for improvement, because it's a place that it's a sphere of our life that's going to lead us to do and to say bad things on a regular basis, potentially. So in order to sell our product or in order to carry out our lives, because it's something we do repetitively, it's very very common that we're repeatedly breaking the precepts. So if it's not killing or stealing, then it's lying or cheating, and so on. Saying bad things, using speech in an improper way on a regular basis. And this is the basis of morality, a basis of right livelihood. So when people ask, what's a good job for me? Is this a good job? Or how can I make a living and still practice the Dharma, or practice the Buddha's teaching? And this is the first answer, is that as long as we're able to keep to the five precepts, and our livelihood doesn't lead us to do things which are immoral, or say things which are immoral, then it's really not against Dharma against practice of the Buddha's teaching. So for instance, we work in an office, and we are a secretary, or we are a office manager, or something that is really has no moral consequences, then we can say, well, this is a livelihood which is pure. This is a livelihood which is not going to be a hindrance in our practice of the Buddhist teaching on the level of morality. And so, as I say, often we stop there in terms of livelihood, but I really think this is area that deserves much deeper attention, because in the end, livelihood is really how, you know, just about living our lives. And even monks have a livelihood of sorts, but it's clear that even someone who in the world is carrying out their livelihood in a moral, ethical, quote unquote moral, ethical way, is still carrying out a very different sort of livelihood than, say, a monk or a nun. So the difference here is worth looking at and worth coming to understand, coming to discuss and to worth thinking about. And this the difference here is not so much on the level of morality, but it comes to be on the level of concentration and on the level of wisdom. So we have these other two parts of the Buddha's teaching. Livelihood, in this sense, we can see it isn't just an issue of morality. That when we work in the world, what we're dealing with is a real and clear disruption of our concentration, of our level of mental quietude and mental calm that we're stressed out, even with things which are quote unquote moral. And why I say quote unquote is because really it's a kind of immorality in the mind that's going on in the mind. The mind is still giving rise to greed and to anger and to stress and to worry and to depression. All of these negative mind states are still arising. This is a normal part of a moral, ethical lifestyle on the lay level. So when we're talking about livelihood as being moral, as being perfectly right and a part of the Buddha's teaching, it really on a deeper level isn't so. And this is where people start to realize that they have to make a decision or they have to find some way to compromise or to come to terms with this seeming dichotomy or this split. You know, there's the worldly life where you have to eat, you have to provide for your necessities, and then there's the Dhamma, there's the practice of meditation. And sometimes these two can seem very incompatible. You know, you work 9 to 5 and at 5 o'clock you get home and you're trying to meditate, but you're so stressed out, you know, that it can be very difficult to meet with any progress on the path. And it just feels like you're taking 3 steps forward, 2 steps back, if that. So this is where people will often have to make a decision. And I think it's... we're often too quick to say there must be a way to say, have your cake and eat it too, in this sense, to stay as an ordinary person working in an office and still expect to find real progress on the path. I think more realistically, people come to the realization that due to their situation, they may have debts or they may have responsibilities that they aren't able to ordain. They aren't able to devote their lives to the practice of the Buddha's teaching. And so they stay as lay people. But I think there's a lot of people also who don't realize the great benefit or this great path which exists, and this is the renunciation of the home life. People might often think that it's just a luxury that a very few people have, or it's something that is taking advantage of other people or so on. The life of say a monk or a nun is in its ideal form. It's the giving up of all of our luxuries. The reason we're able to do away with this 9-to-5 work ethic and we're able to be free from this need to stress and need to bother is because we've given up everything. We've given up money, we've given up possessions, we've given up all attachments in the home life. That we aren't able to seek out the entertainments that other people have, we aren't able to seek out the luxuries that other people have. Our food intake is 1 meal a day, we have all of these rules, our clothes are just rags or simple cloth. And everything else that we use, it's only for the purpose of spreading and teaching and helping other people. So we're not allowed to even, say, have a computer for the purpose of surfing the net, for instance. It has to be for the purpose of spreading the Buddha's teaching. And so we take on a life of great discipline it's a great work and it's a livelihood that is undertaken, and as a result we're able to do away with this. There's this stress and this this immorality in the mind, or this distraction which is inherent in the lay life, in the life of trying to make a living in the world, that is done away with. So at the level of concentration, we have to we can't just come to say that, well, you know, my job isn't hurting anyone. Often here's where people will try to find a livelihood in the world that is also in line with the Dharma. So trying to, say, teach meditation and use it as a livelihood. So some people will be meditation teachers and will receive donations, monetary donations, or even charge for their meditation services. Some people go one step down and will do things which are generally useful. People wanting to become doctors or nurses. Even people who teach something similar to meditation, maybe psychology or social workers or motivational speakers or so on, thinking that this is something which is generally useful for people, and so it's somehow in line with the Dharma. I think there's some merit here for some people to find this sort of a livelihood. I think it can be a way of compromising or coming to a compromise where you don't have to become a monk or a nun and really give up this this luxury of being able to buy things, being able to have the things, and being able to get whatever you want when you want it. But still being able to practice the Dharma or being in line with the Buddha's teaching. But the problem is you're always going to run into this this sort of greed or this necessity to beg almost, or to hint, or to insinuate, until you're able to give up. See, because being a monk, you're at this, you've taken it to the extreme where if you don't get food, you don't eat. And it's really just not possible if you're still living in the world, because you have rent, you have a car, you have all of these overhead expenses. The idea behind becoming a monk or a nun is doing away with all overhead expenses. So you don't own anything, you don't have any debts, you live wherever there's a place to stay. So in a place that people have created for you, you would live in a meditation center, which was solely for the purpose of people to come to meditate, for people to come and meditate. You couldn't say, go out and have your own private house or private dwelling where you could just stay and live, because this is overhead. Then you need to pay the rent and you need to pay the utilities and so on. Becoming a monk or a nun is, you know, if necessary, you live on the side of the street, you live in a park, or you live in a forest or so on. And we run into trouble in places like America, so we have to kind of fudge it a little bit. But the same principle remains, that you're staying in the meditation center, or you're staying in the monastery where that people have created for the purpose of spreading Buddhism. You don't have your own house. It's a public place. It's a place where for the purpose and for the benefit of all people. Sort of like the equivalent of a lay meditation teacher having to live in the meditation center and not having their own private house or private home. And so as a monk or a nun, if you don't have support, and if it comes to the point where it seems like there's not going to be, you know, even enough food donated or any of your requisites, then you simply do without. And this is a frequent, you know, it's likely being a homeless person. For anyone who's ever been in that position, then they can understand how it is. For anyone who's never been in that position, it can be, you know, quite a difficult situation. But it's quite different from, say, trying to live an ordinary life as, say, a Dharma teacher or one who is teaching or helping to spread the Buddhist teaching, because you always have to insinuate or hint at the very least, if not outright begging or asking or charging for your services. And this is again something which is going to bother one's concentration. It creates feelings of guilt, and it can create feelings of stress and anxiety, always wondering or worrying or whether you're going to get enough funds to pay for your necessities and so on. So what we're talking about here is, as being a monk or a nun, is going the next step where we give up all, even to that extent, we give up all of the, all of our necessities, all of our requirements, all of our attachments to the home life, and we become homeless. So in terms of concentration, we can see that if we're really going to gain a very strong state of focus and concentration, then we have to start to change many more things about who we are and how we live our lives. Many people can do this by, say, finding a simple life, and maybe a life which is in line with the Dharma, but in the end, it's much more complicated or complex or subtle than simply saying, I won't do this, I won't make my livelihood in this way or in that way. And there are many people who think that they can do this or that job and still be able to help people or do something good and beneficial for other people. On a level of morality, this may be true, but on the level of concentration, it's going to be much more difficult. And so this is, I think, a real reason why people might decide to actually leave their jobs behind and become a monk or a nun. Although it's not necessary, and I suppose it's worth mentioning that it is possible to gain some level of concentration. It's just something which is going to be much more difficult and cause a lot more unnecessary stress and difficulty because of the amount of work that we have to do. And finally, on the level of wisdom, when we talk about livelihood, we can look at it in terms of the wisdom, or the wisdom which we're gaining in our lives, or our understanding. And see, the problem with livelihood, living in the world, is that it often has a lot to do with creating states of ego and states of delusion, states of attachment to self and conceit. And when we examine our livelihood in terms of wisdom, we have to see that we're actually doing and saying things which are more or less futile or useless, and actually in many ways just creating more and more delusion for people. So if, for instance, when we sell things, we're often selling things to people that they don't really need. When we work in an office, we're often being part of the economy and helping people to get things that they don't need or do things maybe for questionable ends and so on. And that, well, it may not be breaking precepts, and it may not even be bothering our concentration. It's in the end creating the basis for both of these. That simply the wrong, you know, like working in an office that working for this company or that company, working for one of the big retailers or so on, that we end up fostering or encouraging these very things. We're encouraging stress, we're encouraging greed, and we're encouraging anger and hatred and fear and worry and so on. We're being a part of this, and we're creating it in ourselves as well because of the very nature of the job, that maybe we can go through our work being at peace with ourselves, but in the end it's a job which is not bringing real peace and happiness to people. It's not helping people to come closer to the Buddha's teaching. It's not helping people to become free from suffering. And so we have to look at really the basis of what we do, the amount of delusion involved with our work. And we can see that, you know, the amount of time that we have to spend on this earth and how we're spending it, how we're using this time, and what benefit it's bringing to ourselves and to other people. And that actually through the encouraging people to get and to chase after and to build up their egos and their conceits and their desires and their aversions and so on, we're actually creating delusion in the world through our work. We're becoming a part of these organizations and part of society and part of the economy and part of the government and so on. We're just another cog in the wheel. And this is really at the basis of why the world is in such a mess, that we're getting very much caught up with systems and structures which are creating suffering. And this is something which then is going to lead to more and more. And this is the reason why then we have these stressful jobs, and this is the reason why we then do and say bad things. So wisdom is actually the core. It's the root of the problem which we're trying to root out. We're trying to cut out. So in terms of livelihood, this is something that it's kind of the deepest level that we can look at our work, when we're working in the world, for instance, that we might decide for ourselves that it's time to simplify things, that rather than getting a big house and a nice car and a good retirement plan, we might decide to live a much simpler life, which might be much more outwardly difficult and not as secure, but is in the end a lot more noble, a lot more peaceful, a lot more based on wisdom, and it's going to give us great concentration and allow us to live moral and ethical lives. We really have to decide for ourselves, and sometimes it takes a compromise. There are many people out there who are not going to be able to leave the home life, but there are also many people who do change their livelihood. I mean, I had one student who was a biologist, and he used to cut up rats before he started meditating. And once he started meditating, he realized that he couldn't do that anymore. And now he works for the government. He does something for the government. He was able to change his livelihood to that extent. I would encourage, I think, a greater sort of change of lifestyle. And the ultimate sort of perfection of a livelihood for someone who has not become a monk is epitomized in the Buddhist canon, the Buddhist Bible, I guess, if you will, with this man who makes pots, and he goes down to the river and he gets loose clay that was dug up by rats or fall of, caved in by the rain or so on, washed up by the river. And he gathered up the clay, and he would go into the forest and collect wood that had fallen down, and he would mold the clay into pots and fire them up in using the wood, that the discarded dead wood. And he would make these simple pots and put them by the side of the road and sit there all day as people walked by. And people would walk by, and they would ask him, "How much is that pot? How much is that pot?" And whatever pot they pointed to, he would just say, "Well, you leave some beans, leave some rice, whatever you think it's worth, and take whatever you like." And this is how he made his livelihood, you know, just living by the side of the road, or maybe living in a simple dwelling or so on, and selling these pots. And so while we couldn't do something exactly like this here in the West, you still need, or in the modern world, you still need you need to pay rent and so on and so on. we take this as an example, and we live our lives trying to emulate this kind of idea, or even better, to emulate the life of a monk, where we know we have to make some compromises, and we will never be able to live a pure life unless we are able to make the jump and give up our attachments to the world. But we make steps in this direction. So rather than thinking we want to become the manager or the boss or the head or become rich and make a fortune or become famous or become a big shot, we're content with something very simple, and something which the simpler the better. And if it means we have to leave our house and get a smaller apartment, or we have to sell our car and get a cheaper car or so on, this or this, or these many different things, we have to give up some of our luxuries, then I think this is the steps that we have to take, and these are the steps in the right direction. And to the point where we're able to do away with all of our burdens, all of our things that are required of us in the world, and are able to make the leap and become a monk or a nun, or become a full-time meditator, or go to live in a monastery. Even some people who don't ordain but go to live in and help out in a monastery, or help out in a meditation center, help to build a meditation center. I know many people who aren't able to ordain, but they're working very hard to build up meditation centers in their area, so that once they can build it up, then they'll be able to give up this this sort of a life. So finding a way to get closer and closer to the Dharma, and not sort of fooling ourselves into thinking that we can have our cake and eat it too. I think I would advocate that we should be trying to change our lifestyles, and trying all the time to get closer and closer, step by step, to a lifestyle where we're living the Dharma. And I think I'm justified in this. I think many people, they're going to say it's pretty biased to just say you have to become a monk, or you have to become a nun, or you have to leave the home life. But we're on this earth for 80 years, maybe. Nobody lives to be 100 anymore, I don't think. Very few, anyway. 80 years at most, let's say. And then that's it. Then we don't know where we're going. We don't know what happens. And here we are chasing after nothing, chasing after something that is meaningless, living our lives running around in a hamster wheel for nothing, that in the end we will have to leave behind and not know where we're going, not know what comes next, and dying in uncertainty with a mind which is still distracted and unfocused and unclear and impure, that we still have many things about ourselves that we feel unresolved inside, that there are many things about ourselves that we don't understand, and that we will live our lives, we will die in a confused state of mind. So it's just sort of some thoughts on how we should live our lives, and sort of what livelihood means in a real sense, that we're not just talking about what are the right kinds of work that we can do in lay life that aren't going to be wrong or sinful, for instance. In Buddhism, we're actually talking about changing the way we live our lives, and giving up our burdens, giving up our attachments more and more, to the point where we're able to free ourselves from all suffering. So thank you all. I think I'm recovering still from this flu, but hopefully over the next few days I'll be able to give more and more talks. Thank you all for tuning in. And if anyone would like to discuss, I'm happy to stick around for a little bit longer. But that's all for today. Thanks for coming.